Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Truth isn't truth. Jeff Bonanger joins us. I hope what he says is true. Go on.
Well, it's a funny thing, right? I think more along the lines in regard to this discussion. I think about friends that I had growing up, but one guy in particular, who's now, by the way, a doctor of theology, a Baptist preacher. He goes around at these churches and all this other stuff. And believe me, I'm still friends with him. I have been since we were kids playing soccer. And he is so deeply religious. It's his truth, right? You can't argue with him about it. You can't even bring up counterpoints because he's all in on it. And I love him dearly, and it's great. I don't agree with a lot of it, but at the same time, I respect his conviction. And when he whips out the Bible and says, look, this is truth, right? He means it. He means it. This book could say 2 + 2 = 87, and he believes it because it's in that book.
Right. He believes it. So what we're dealing with, again, is belief.
You're right.
Not truth.
Correct. But to him, there's no difference. Right.
And isn't that the problem?
People confuse
belief with truth.
That's correct.
Most people that will actually think about it and have considered it at a pretty deep level, especially in a philosophical sense, we could probably loosely define truth pretty accurately as whatever the case is.
Sure.
So if somebody makes a claim about something, if that claim happens to be the case, then it is true.
Right.
A person might believe that it's not the case, but then the truth stands apart from belief. And that's why we have things like, say, courtrooms, because one person might believe that something happened in a certain way, or one person is guilty and another person might say, well, no, they're not. They're innocent. By the time everybody gets all of their evidence out, a picture of what is true that is separate from everyone's belief is formed, and the judge can make a decision based on what is true, hopefully, and not what everybody simply believes to be
true. Actually, truth is not the burden on the courts. It's beyond a reasonable doubt, right?
Well, right. We can try to get as close to the truth as possible.
Right.
And sometimes we can do that.
Right.
But if we can't do that, if we can at least get beyond a reasonable doubt, that's progress. That's part of critical thinking, which is something that you brought up in our last show as well, and something that you do value. You're not simply someone who is in the believer's camp. We both love a good story. I love your approach to the story, to storytelling. You have an excellent podcast, which we'll get into some of the subjects there and get into some of those stories. But just for our listeners out there who maybe aren't familiar with you, you're not advocating that people don't think critically or just simply buy into whatever beliefs happen to be out there just because it's fun.
Yeah. Oh, no, of course not. So here's the thing about me. I'm an overthinker to a fault. I'm not proud of this. It's a burden, but it's who I am. It's part of my DNA. I really try to look at something from every possible angle, you know, whether it's someone else's point of view or whether it's whatever I'm studying. I want to look at it from the bottom, the top, the left, the right, everything to try to reach my own conclusions. And because my background is journalism, I've always tried to present both sides. And the funny thing is, we live in a time, I remember I was working on a TV production. This was over 10 years ago. And I was talking to the executive producer and I said, yeah, look, let's present both sides, this side and that side, let people reach their own conclusions. And she said something I never forgot. She said, well, if you present equal parts of both sides, you're left with a net gain of zero. And I went, yikes, you're right. I mean, she's right in regards to television consumers, right? And things like that. You can't just give them both sides and leave it in the middle and say, all right, pick one. They need to be told. That was her point. I mean, and, you know, the stuff we were working on was not high science or culture. But at the same time, that was her point. All of my training, everything else was just like, be objective, get both sides. If you're dealing with a story in the papers, right, you got to get the plaintiff and you've got to get the defendant. You just have to. You have to hear both sides.
The thing is here also, there's something called false balance, which means basically if you know something is provably untrue, you can't give it equal coverage to something that at least passively seems to be true.
Oh, sure. But I mean, as a journalist, if it's a known fact, you just state it, you know, that this has been proven, moving on. You know, if you've got new arguments, then we'll hear it. But this part's true, then what are the other parts of the case? You know what I mean? And that happens. There's still decent journalists out there that are doing that in regards to all subjects, right? Whatever it is, even sports, whatever, you know, like that's almost the comforting thing about sports journalism, right? Is that some of it can't be argued. This team scored 8 runs. That team scored 6. You can go watch the game again yourself if you don't believe it. There's something very comforting in that. Maybe we could all learn something from sports reporting. No, it's funny. I'm sorry. My brain's drifting off right now because Wait, stay with me. I know some sports reporters, and I'm thinking, wait, maybe we gotta bring them in, right? Maybe there's something they could teach us about how you cover something that we've all seen. Huh. All right. Sorry. Back to topic. Forgive me. I'm going to chew on that, though.
Well, I suppose. All right, let's start off with something related to sports. In some sense, the sport of fishing.
Oh, yes.
Back in January. Now, we're talking about here. You have an Emmy-nominated show called New England Legends, and you've got a podcast to match. And in January, you had one called The Beaver Trout of Vermont.
Yes.
What the heck is a beaver trout?
A beaver trout is a fur-bearing trout. A trout? That's right. Yeah, stay with me. So this story has been around for literally 150 years, and it started just before the U.S. Civil War. Some kids on a lake, the very northern part of Vermont, right on the Canadian border, caught this trout while ice fishing and said it had a fur coat that it had to grow during the coldest parts of winter. And they brought it down and started talking about it. But then the Civil War happened and everyone in town sort of forgot about it for a while. Those two boys lived through the Civil War. One of them came back and became a newspaper man. Started talking about that story again, and everybody leaned in and he said, oh man, this would sell some papers. So he starts writing about the beaver trout. The crazy thing is pretty soon, other people said, well, I've caught one too, right? I've caught a trout that has fur on it. And then the story goes away for a while because news cycles, even back then, just like today, people do lose interest no matter how interesting or bizarre or whatever. They say, okay, I've heard about the beaver trout, and then they forget. And 20 years goes by, and then someone else catches one. And this guy named Mr. Sessions catches one, allegedly, in December, and he put out a postcard of him ice fishing and this trout, which looks like any trout you've ever seen, maybe 15 inches in length, and covered in a fur pelt from right behind the eyes all the way down to where the tail starts. And people look at the photo and they say, come on, fish don't have, right? Like, fish don't have fur. They're not mammals. There's no such thing. It cannot be. And so the story goes away again. It comes back in the 1940s. It comes back in the 1970s. People write letters to the paper saying, oh, I've caught 3 in my whole life. They're very difficult to catch. You really got to be good at your stuff to catch one of these things. And then I found out there is an animal called the hairy frog of Central Africa. And if I showed you a picture of it, picture a frog like many you've ever seen, but it's got these very coarse hair looking thing sticking out of its legs and on its lower back, and only the males. It looks like a very coarse hair of like a guy's beard. And it turns out it's not actually hair. What that is there's capillaries in there, so it can store extra oxygen during mating season, and it can stay below water longer with the eggs and so on. But it sure does look like hair. If you had one out of the water, you'd be like, that thing has hair.
We need a break now, guys.
We got a break. Okay, we'll get back.
And we'll have more fish stories soon. I would say this, not to denigrate those who want to fish. I tried it when I was a kid. It just didn't make it for me. The same thing for golf. But again, that's me. Jeff, Gene Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
I'm here with Scott Jusseum, founder of OMG Tax. Tell us how your company helps our listeners out there who have a problem with the IRS.
My team of lawyers, enrolled agents, and licensed tax experts remove wage garnishments sometimes in the same day. We even have reduced the total debt some of our clients were required to pay through what is known as an offer in compromise.
Can you give us an example of somebody you help?
Oh, can I ever? We have taken a $500,000 liability with the IRS. Guess what? The client didn't pay a dime through the representation known as non-collectible status with the government.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000 and you want to see if it's possible to pay a lot less, call OMG Tax right now for a free tax-saving consultation.
Call 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. That's 800-486-8112.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $10,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-976-1460. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-976-1460. That's 1-800-976-1460. 1-800-976-1460.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Nobody cares about me fishing or not golfing or whatever. Jeff Belanger, please continue with the fish stories.
Yes, right. So now we fast forward to modern times, and if you go around northern Vermont, various stores and so on will have a mounted fish on the wall with a hairy pelt on it. And so I called the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department, the official, you know, state-funded department that every state has. I was pretty soon connected to one of the guys that's in charge of the fisheries there. And he said, oh, yeah, I've heard about it for years and years. And I said, okay, well, how does this happen? And he said, well, I actually have one on my wall. And I went, okay, what? You know, like, talk to me about this. And he said, well, I love the story so much, and I'm also an amateur taxidermist, so I took this old trout that we had, and I had this muskrat pelt, and I put it together, and now we've got one here on the wall of the Vermont Fish and Wildlife Department. It's kind of like this inside joke that's been going around for 150 years, and it keeps making the papers and so on. But it also turns out there is a disease called ick that affects fish. It can even affect your aquarium fish if you have a freshwater aquarium. It's a fungus that can grow on a fish, and if it goes out of control, it can cover the fish. And if you looked at it through the water especially, it looks like it's covered in white hair. It's not. It's a fungus, but it sure does look like fur. And I can imagine if you're a fisherman and you've heard the stories and you've laughed at it and you've seen the photo, which you know must be doctored, it must just be a muskrat pelt on a trout, and you laugh about it, but then you look in the water and you see this hairy fish swim by, that's got to just shake you up, doesn't it? So suddenly, the two things get connected. There really is a hairy trout. I saw one. I saw it covered with white hair. It just swam by me. And there it went. What you saw was a sick fish.
Now, you produced a show with a fellow named Ray Auger.
Ogier.
Yeah, I mean, the show sounds like you guys actually went out looking for one of these fish. Like, did you actually go out looking for one? Or?
We do. We're always, like, on adventures, and then we pull in experts. But, you know, keep in mind, the show is extremely edited. It's supposed to be a show. It's not just a couple of guys BSing. So we've got voice actors, so old quotes and newspaper articles and stuff like that. We'll have voice actors read them to kind of keep you in the moment. But those are the words from the paper. I didn't make them up, you know?
I love the show. It's really tell us a bit about Ray. Unfortunately, he's not here to speak for himself, but tell us
about him. I should speak for him anyway. He's a crafty guy. No, Ray is awesome. Ray's a radio guy. He's 25 years in radio. He's the morning guy locally. And so he and I met years ago because he had me on a show to interview me. And we just sort of kept in touch because he loves weird stuff. And so he's like, oh, you got to take me on an adventure. I said, all right. So we'd go to a few different things. And then we started doing this podcast back in August of 2017. And I said, all right, you want to go on some adventures? Like, let's try to chronicle every single legend in New England, just one story at a time. That was the deal. We're trying to get to all of them, which, by the way, I know if I live to be 1,000 years old, I will never get to all of them, which is strangely comforting in a way, right?
Yeah, it's amazing how many that you've come up with. I've collected a list of what are, to me, kind of the highlights.
Yeah.
And another one back in January. Of this year, actually, not that long ago, the Haunted House Curve.
Yeah.
What is the Haunted House Curve about?
So there's a town in southern New Hampshire called Hampton, New Hampshire, and there's a stretch of road. And the funny thing is, it's not so well known as Haunted House Curve anymore, but it was in the 1940s and 1950s because there was all these car accidents. It's Route 1. Which Route 1 runs from, you know, Maine to Miami. But it's that stretch of road right there is part of Route 1, which is a pretty well-traveled road. The reason it's called Haunted House Curve is because the General Moulton House is right there in that curve. And General Moulton is a guy, they say, not only haunts that house, but once made a deal with the devil. He was a decorated soldier, first for the British Army, and then served under General Washington during the American Revolution. And they said he was looking for money, and so he made a deal with the devil that he would get a boot filled with gold every single month. And so the devil told him, keep the boot underneath your hearth, and I'll drop the gold in through the chimney. And so what Moulton did was he cut the bottom off of his boot. So the boot could never be filled, and the gold would just keep pouring in and pouring in and pouring in. And so he's one of several New Englanders who have been known to outsmart the devil. So the devil's furious because he's losing a lot of gold, and he doesn't like being outsmarted. And the story goes he burned down Moulton's house, and Moulton rebuilt. Of course, he had plenty of gold to do it, according to the story. And then his wife gets sick, and he has one of her friends take care of him, but as she's taking care of her friend, he's taking care of her, and pretty soon his wife dies, and there's a lot of speculation that he actually killed her, as opposed to letting nature take its course, because suddenly he gave all of the jewelry he had ever given to his wife, he gives it to his new girlfriend, who was also her caregiver, and in less than a year, they're married, and it's very scandalous, and poems are written about it, and how the ghost of his dead wife is standing over the marital bed, taking her wedding ring off of the new bride, you know, in the middle of the night, and it's just these great stories. And then when he passed away, it was said that he haunted the house forevermore, bootsteps and so on. And the thing about Haunted House Curve is that there have been multiple accidents over the years. And if you think about that, imagine if you're driving down that road, and I don't care if you believe in ghosts or not, but you go, ooh, this is Haunted House Curve. Oh, look, over there. See, and it's not close to the road either. It's set back a little bit. There's the Molten House way over there. Yeah, they say that. Yeah, see it? See it over there? There's, oh, geez, you're not watching the road, right? Wham! And you're now part of the story forever. Haunted House Curve, cursed. Because the devil made a deal with some guy in that house over there, and it's haunted, and you weren't paying attention, and you just wrecked your car.
That sounds awful. I mean, we just hope that doesn't actually happen to anybody.
You but know. It could. It does, right? My God. Okay, a few years ago, I was called by a television station in the Carolinas somewhere. There's a ghost train that's supposed to run at midnight every, I want to say it's like August 28th, because it's my sister's birthday, if I'm remembering correctly. Forgive me if I'm wrong. But it's once a year, specific day, specific time, and this ghost train runs on real train tracks. And some people went out looking for the ghost train. And, of course, one of them gets hit by a train and dies by a real train. Right? And I'm sure there's alcohol involved. I'm sure they're at the bar. They're going, the ghost train is tonight. Let's go, man. Let's go. And so suddenly they're out there, and how tragic, right? You're now a permanent part of that story.
It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's right. That's right. And so it's not all that weird to think about Haunted House Curve. If you are distracted by anything, my friend who owns the Lizzie Borden House in Fall River, Massachusetts, man, there's fender benders there all the time because you're looking at the house and not at the road. And that one is right up against the road. So we do get distracted by legendary things. And that's just another example.
I'm going to ask one thing before we break is, does that therefore create the effect of wishful thinking? And in other words, you're looking so hard to see something weird, maybe you do see something weird, or you something does happen, but you're inclined to interpret it as being what you expected to see. Jeff, Gene, and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Has your body ever gone low blood sugar, feeling weak, shaky, knowing you better eat something fast? We all know high blood sugar can lead to many metabolic problems. At GCNteam.com, we have a healthy blood sugar pack, focusing on the structure and function of stable blood sugar. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Nothing feels worse than unstable blood sugar. Call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
This is George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM and History Channel's Ancient Aliens. We support the amazing energy, nutrition, and skincare products from Jeunesse. Jeunesse products are designed by leading doctors in their field with natural ingredients and even stem cell technology. These products help your body perform and look better. Shop Jeunesse at GCNlife.com or call 1-844-443-6637. GCNlife.com or 844-443-6637.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
President Trump's legal team has issued its response ahead of opening arguments in his impeachment trial, while House Democrats laid out their case, saying the president has abandoned his oath and betrayed the public trust. The White House plans a couple of different defense strategies, arguing the impeachment articles allege no violation of law. The Senate trial is a product of a flawed process of the House, and the case collapses on the facts.
They're trying to impeach the son of a... Can you believe that?
On Capitol Hill, House impeachment managers filed a trial brief establishing the president is guilty of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. It follows a document dump on Friday by Democrats with even more evidence from Lev Parnas, who's an associate of President Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. This is USA Radio News.
Our U.S. Constitution is amazing. It's full of what's called negative rights, designed to protect us from the corrupt powers of a dictatorship.
Like our right to worship our own God, not some official state religion.
Our right to prevent the government from seizing our property without paying fair market value for it.
Or our right to be tried by a jury of our peers, people like us, not by some star tribunal.
And that's why America has become the richest, most just society in the world.
Other countries force so-called positive rights onto their citizens. These enable one group to take from another group their free speech, money, and choice by using government force. Socialists love wielding this power over people.
Sometimes we take our freedoms for granted, but we can lose our Bill of Rights and our Constitution and become like Venezuela or North Korea, failed, brutal socialist regimes.
We need your help to spread the good news about our amazing U.S. Constitution. Help us take back America. Go to OurAmericanRights.com.
Brought to you by the American Media Council.
Message and data rates may apply.
Help! Seriously, I'm too young for hair loss.
My hairline keeps creeping back. Receding?
I got this bald spot. It's thinning everywhere.
I'm gonna have to give up and shave it.
Dude, put down the razor, because Bosley, America's number one hair restoration expert, is about to give you your real hair back permanently. Don't ignore the signs of hair loss. Bosley is giving away an absolutely free information kit that reveals all the signs and a free gift card to anyone who texts KIT88 to 85850. Bosley will show you for free how great your hair could look. Using the latest technology, Bosley's solution to hair loss is permanent and protected by the Bosley Guarantee. Plus, since Bosley has new non-surgical options, you owe it to yourself to text now for an absolutely free information kit and a gift card for $250 off, no matter what level of hair loss you have. Text KIT88 to 85850. KIT88 to 85850.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Jeff Belanger, my little point here.
Yes.
Aren't we seeing here possible examples of self-fulfilling prophecies? We expect to see it, we do.
Sure. That accounts for some of it. Of course it does, right? But then there are the people that don't know about it, have no connection to it, and suddenly experience something. And they say, well, what did I just see? Why did that happen here? That, to me, are the most interesting stories. So, yeah, that is all part of the discussion. The people that heard about a place where sightings occur, whatever kind they are, they go there looking for them. They don't want to be let down either. And so they look really, really hard, and any little tiny thing suddenly becomes paranormal. Yeah, of course, that's all part of this. It's all part of it. And then there's the people, the skeptics, right, who say, well, shoot, I just saw something weird, but that doesn't fall into my belief system. Therefore, I must be mistaken, and it can't be real. That happens, too. It's a strange world we live in, isn't it?
One of your stories just hit me, because I'm looking at a list that Randall had done, the Robin Hood of Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah. So my point with that story is that the Robin Hood that you know and love, as the one in like Sherwood Forest, the whole thing, I actually believe he was born in Westboro, Massachusetts, more than Sherwood Forest. And the reason for that is, number one, we don't know of any historical Robin Hood, right? He's kind of a conglomerate of different ideas. And there was a time in England when, there was a huge disparity between the haves and the have-nots. And there were people out there in the woods that were robbing noblemen, but they were just robbing them and killing them. It had nothing to do with giving it to the poor. Or in this case, the poor was also the person robbing them. So yeah, I guess that was true, right? I robbed and murdered the wealthy and gave it to myself. So that story gets passed around in poems and things like that. But really, it was an American idea that turned Robin Hood from that historical, those historical events into the figure of this noble thief. You know, that was, that's a much more modern idea. And so anyway, in Westboro, Massachusetts, there was a guy that was born, and this is a little Tom Cook, and he's another deal with the devil kind of person from New England. When he was really little, he was sick, and the story goes that his mother prayed over him, had all the deacons pray over him, and she said, look, I don't care what come what may, I want him to just get better. And the deacons were appalled, because usually you just pray for God's will to be done, whether that's take his life or make him better. But no, she didn't care. She just wants him better. And they interpreted that as making a deal with the devil on behalf of her son. And they say the boy grew up and was just a terror, a real ne'er-do-well. And when he's 13, the devil comes calling to collect his soul. He figures he's been around long enough. And little Tom Cook thinks quick and says, he's getting dressed one morning when the devil walks into his room to take him down below to hell. And he says, listen, devil, just give me a minute to put my suspenders on, and then I'll go with you. And the devil nods and says, okay. And then he takes his suspenders and he throws them in the fireplace so they burn up. And he never wears suspenders again, so the devil can never take his soul. It's his wonderful origin story. And he grew up figuring, well, now that I'm free of the devil can never have me, and heaven sure doesn't want me, he was just had total freedom to just do whatever he wanted. And he was known to rob from the wealthy and give to the poor with impunity all around New England, really. But he started in little Westboro, Massachusetts. And his stories were pretty well documented. He was born in 1738, and all through the mid-1700s, he was doing this until one day some noblemen caught up with him and pretty much beat him within an inch of his life. And his story just sort of fades away. But he was so well documented around here that the belief is that that story made it to England and then sort of mixed with those early origin poems of the hooded thieves who would murder and rob the noblemen. And it sort of blended into this idea of the noble thief who's not going to kill you. He's just going to rob you. He's going to give to the poor. And then, of course, later on, we added Maid Marian and the Merry Men and all this other stuff. And so when you watch those Disney cartoons of Robin Hood, I think actually the guy from Massachusetts has a lot more influence on that character than anyone from Sherwood Forest.
Therefore, the fact that Kevin Costner, who did a Robin Hood version with his American accent, was more accurate than Cary Elwes using the British accent.
It's tough to pull off, right? I mean, think about it. That's a story that everyone knows, Robin Hood, right? How are you going to do it again? It's just been done and done and done. My favorite is still the one where it was the fox, the Disney cartoon one, right, where the fox is Robin Hood.
I just wanted to clarify, you're talking about this origin as being actually a real person and not just a myth.
I'm saying the earliest parts are a myth, a conglomerate of vague people. And this real guy, Cook, from Westboro, Massachusetts, I think his story had a lot more influence on the fiction than anything else.
So Cook was a real guy.
Cool. Cook was a real guy, yeah. Whether he made a deal with the devil, I mean, that's you know, that stuff. Same with General Moulton, right? Like another guy made a deal with the devil and outsmarted him.
So the devil did not go down to Georgia. He went to New England.
He started here, man, for sure. We have devil's footprints all over New England. There's one in Maine, and it's this great story. They were building the church. This is a mid-1700s story. And they're building a church, and anyone who's ever put a shovel in the ground in New England knows the one thing that we have in abundance is rocks. You know, you can't dig more than a couple of inches without hitting one. They're digging for the foundation of this church, and they hit a big one, a big, big rock that just wouldn't wiggle. And the story goes that one day this worker said, you know, I would sell my soul to the devil to move this rock. And that's all you got to say. And everyone gasps and says, oh, you can't say something like that, right? And the next day they show up, and the rock's been moved. It's been moved to the stone wall nearby. And that worker's never seen again. But on the rock, you see this triangular, like, hoof print, and then you see what looks like almost like a human footprint. And they say that was it. That was the deal. The devil's hoof is the one behind, and the human footprint trying to get away is the one in front. And that rock is still on display. You can go see it to this day. I've touched it. We photographed it. You could see the triangular hoof print. You can see what looks like could be sort of a human print. And it's right there, right next to the Meeting House Church. And it's a story that they're kind of all too happy to tell, right? Because there it is. Go outside and look. You can touch it. You can take a picture, take a selfie with it, whatever you want. Because the moral is, if you sell your soul to the devil, you'll get what you want, but at a price you may not want to pay.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for.
That's right. So imagine you get to preach that from the pulpit, and it's a nice day outside, and you go, come on, let's go. Let's go outside. I'll show you the rock. There it is. You know, and you've got this physical evidence 25 feet from the church, and everybody can see it and touch it.
Fun story. Let's go to another story. I have somebody here. We're not going to actually get through all these, okay? All right. This is one that gets us back into another aspect of our paranormal universe. We're going to break in a moment. America's Stonehenge?
Oh, what, yeah.
What do you tell us that? That's
America's Stonehenge, we have our own version. It's in Salem, New Hampshire, which is the southern part of the state. It's a site that's been studied since at least the 1950s. It's also known as Mystery Hill. And it's a small hilltop. If you go up to the top of it, there are these alignment stones all around. And when the, you know, various sunrises or sunsets hits the two alignment stones, that marks different events like solstices, equinoxes, but also, interestingly, half holidays, the halfway points between the solstices and equinoxes. And this, this site's been studied by Harvard University. Dr. Barry Fell studied it. And it turns out these alignments are just the tiniest bit off because the Earth wobbles as it rotates on its axis. And he's saying the last time it would have been perfect was about 4,000 years ago. And that's really shakes up what everybody thought they knew, right? It looks sort of European in origin, but we don't think Europeans were in New England 4,000 years ago. Not impossible at all.
Let's just take our time machine,
yeah,
our wave rider, and go back to see it. Jeff, Gene, and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, rockoids.com.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with Reputation Defender. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with Reputation Defender. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771. For your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with Reputation Defender. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
This is me, the Mercivist. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio, exactly according to my plan.
Funny, Jeff Belanger, how conventional wisdoms can be confounded by little nasty things like truth.
Yeah, isn't that something? So just to finish on America's Stonehenge, I have been to Stonehenge in England. And when you walk up to that site, you just go, wow, how did they do this that many years ago? This is, it's impressive. It really is. It's something to behold. But when you walk up to America's Stonehenge, you're not struck with how did they do this? You're more struck with why did they do this? Because the stones, the alignment stones are maybe 4 or 5 feet in height. I mean, 2 or 3 guys could easily get these things in place. You know, no, they're big and they're heavy, but it's not. It's not insane. But the strange thing about it is that when you look at it, it is a calendar. I would argue that next to farming, a calendar is probably the most important discovery in human history, right? And one could even argue more important than farming, really. The earliest calendars go back maybe like 13, 14,000 years, the same time when people stopped being nomadic. And if you're going to farm, you need a calendar of some kind. It would be life and death, right? You would learn year after year, generation after generation, when this sunset or this sunrise aligns with these two stones, we plant this seed and we get the best results. We harvest when it's here. We hunt these animals when these alignments are over here. If you hunt these animals too early, you might wipe them out and then you'll have no food source. If you plant this seed too early, it'll freeze and it won't grow. If you harvest too late, it'll rot, right? These are things that would be fine-tuned generation after generation and be passed down from one person to another, because your life, and not just your life, your whole family, your whole community depends on it. If you're not going to be nomadic, if you're going to stay put, you've got to get it right. The most interesting feature of America's Stonehenge is there's this stone tablet that looks like your kitchen cutting board. It's a large flat stone, maybe 5.5 feet in length, maybe 2.5, 3 feet wide. And it's got this groove carved all around it, just like your cutting board for your steak to collect the juice. They call it the sacrificial table. It's believed that, as we know, any of us who've ever planted a garden or grass or flowers or anything, even when you follow all the rules, when you plant at the right time and give it water and harvest and everything at the right time, sometimes things go wrong, right? Sometimes there are droughts, there are blights, there are, you know, animals come and eat your crops or whatever. And when that happens, you followed the rules, which, by the way, weren't just dictated by the sun and stars. At some point, that's going to be literally sacred. They're going to say, God above has told us when to do this, right? But look, the sun sets there, we plant, we do this, we do that. So if you followed all the rules and something went wrong, clearly you need to do something to make it right. And this sacrificial table, they believe, was a place to go and try to make that right. Whether it was human sacrifice or animal sacrifice, we don't really know. But this is clearly a sacred site. And if you believe Harvard, it could be close to 4,000 years old. And the strange thing is, though we know full well there were humans living here 4,000, there were humans living here 10,000 years ago, for sure. Native Americans have been here a long time. But they didn't seem to work in stone like this. So it's really a head-scratcher as to who built it and why.
Yeah, I guess if there's been some theories out there. That was it Scott Walter? You know, he's pretty interesting. I mean, a lot of people like to dispute his work. And there are people, especially in what we call up here in Canada, the First Nations, that they don't like those kinds of discoveries, especially if they seem to predate their own cultures, because it implies that there was actually someone else here before them. So it could get fairly political, too. Really quite interesting stuff.
We know there was the Vikings were over here, like long before Columbus, right? I mean, they were up in Canada for sure, and they've left marks as far down as Martha's Vineyard. And there's no reason to believe they wouldn't keep sailing south, right? I mean, if you keep finding land, why wouldn't you keep following the coast? I mean,
right.
Yeah, I mean, that's just logical. So
I think Scott's theory had something to do with the Aztecs or the Mayans. Possibly. And then there's another one that say that the Chinese had ships that could cross the ocean on the other side and landed in California kind of thing. So there are these mysteries, and I think they're pretty cool.
They are. But just a finishing thought on America's Stonehenge, if it was built 4,000 years ago, someone intended to stay there. Right. Someone intended, because it's a lot of trouble. You know, it's quite a bit of effort to build this thing. And again, literally the three of us could build it. There's no stone there that the three of us couldn't put in a place or whatever. But the precision of it is the impressive part when you look at it. And again, solstices and equinoxes, those four points on the year are sacred in almost every culture around the world. Right. Because it's not an arbitrary day. It's a very specific moment that occurs every year, all the time, since the beginning. And halfway between those dates are what, especially like the Celtic people, they called them half holidays. You know, the halfway between summer and winter, and halfway between winter and spring, and so on. So those 8 points on the calendar year are sacred. And the fact that this America Stonehenge not only marks the solstices and equinoxes, but also those halfway points, makes us sort of look toward the Europeans and say, well, what were you doing here 4,000 years ago? And what other evidence is there besides this one site? It's really perplexing.
Definitely, it's a mystery to be solved. Speaking of solving mysteries, another one you did in January, Boston's Psychic Sleuth. Now, these have been very controversial. The skeptics will say there's never been a case of an actual psychic sleuth. Other people will say, no, they know people in the police departments who have hired psychics. So what is Boston's Psychic Sleuth all about?
So there was a story that, again, timing, so interesting on this one. It was 1846 when a young man from the Bruce family of Milford, Massachusetts, took a borrowed wagon into Boston. And back then, that would have been about a 2-day ride. It's only like 26 miles, but with a horse and wagon during that time period, it would have been about 2 days. And took it into Boston to sell a load of straw and things like that for his family, and was never seen again. So his family, of course, is looking. They're putting the word out to authorities. What happened? The horse was sold after no one had claimed it after so many days in a stable in Boston and so on. And it was just absolutely perplexing. 2 years later, the family's daughter goes into Boston, and suddenly she's at the doorstep of a psychic medium who says, I know about your brother. And she comes home and she tells her father, and her father goes to see the psychic, and suddenly he's given information that no, your son is buried in a tomb on the neck, and the neck is a place on Boston back before a lot of land was filled in. Today it's West Roxbury, which is sort of like a suburb of Boston. There's a tomb there, and you'll find him there. And so the father says, all right, I'll go look. And the story goes, he opens the crypt, and there's his boy. I mean, he's rotting, but he recognizes the clothes, recognizes the color of the hair, even his misshapen teeth. And this psychic helped him find his son. And it's making all the papers. The thing that's so curious about this time is that the spiritualist movement had just been born, right? And it's in the papers, these old stories, right? Now, the spiritualist movement was born in the 1840s in Hydesville, New York. And this is the Fox sisters. They hear the knocks on the wall, and they start communicating with it and say, Mr. Splitfoot, do as I do, and they're clapping patterns. And the story goes, by the end of the weekend, 100 neighbors had witnessed this crazy phenomena, the girls communicating with spirits. They went on to become the Jonathan Edwards and the Sylvia Browns of their day. They did psychic readings in theaters. They would sell out theaters and do psychic readings, and you'd hear these claps coming from seemingly nowhere as the girls would communicate with spirits. Hugely popular. So now suddenly psychic mediums are popping up, not just the Fox sisters, but now they're popping up everywhere. And this is exactly the kind of PR that the movement needs, right? You've got, it's not just come communicate with your dead grandma. This is a brand new phenomenon. Today, when we hear about it, like you said, you're like, oh, come on, the police don't seek these people out. This is like just a few years old, so it's brand spanking new. There's no one to even doubt yet. And suddenly you've got this case that the people in the spiritualist movement are talking about, like, yes, it's so much more than communicating with your dead grandma. This guy was reunited with the body of his son. And not only that, story goes further to suggest that she could point him to the killer, and she led to one man, to another, and the father spent years trying to get a conviction based off of this psychic testimony, and then the trail kind of goes cold. The newspapers don't report on it again, probably because there's no conviction, there's no arrest, there's no nothing. But the bigger point is that it made the paper because this is all brand new. And used as an example of how these powers can help solve crimes.
We've got some powers here, the powers of advertising. More to come with Gene Randall. Jeff, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items. And entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.